It's At the Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
2-1 pitch.
Fly ball deep left center field. Yes, sir. Let's admire that one. There she goes. A blast and a half for Edwin Encarnacion. And the Blue Jays are in flight here in Arizona, leading 3-1 on Edwin's 25th.
Well, the problem is it's free agent. They got Goldschmidt here. If they had average Joe, they might sign him. But, I don't know what it is. He likes hitting here.
It's At the Letters for Wednesday, July the 20th on Sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. My name is Arden Zwelling, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Ben Nicholson-Smith. Ben, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. It has been a while since we've been in studio doing one of these, but good to be talking Blue Jays.
Nice work with Shai last week, rounding up the trade market, speculating.
A lot of speculating. We talked a lot of trades. Essentially, it was an entire trade podcast.
Right. And immediately after that podcast, basically, Drew Pomeranz goes to the Boston Red Sox for Anderson Espinosa. Probably one of the top 25 prospects in the game, depending on who you ask for. What did you, you guys didn't have a chance to talk about it last week. What did you make of that move?
I mean, I love it for the Padres. Not that we need to dwell on where they're headed, but I think they did a tremendous job to turn a guy that they got for spare parts into a top prospect. For the Red Sox, I mean, Pomeranz is pretty good, and he can stick around for a while, and he's not making much money. So he is a pretty valuable trade chip, and he addresses their biggest need. So I can see why they made it too. And you got to give Dombrowski credit for just going out there and seeing needs and addressing them. Ziegler, Aaron Hill, Pomeranz, like he's been very aggressive.
The one thing I learned from last year when I did that story on Alex Anthopoulos' trade deadline and all this stuff that he went through at the end was that Dave Dombrowski does not mess around. Like, he does not screw it. He calls a GM and he says, look, this is the guy I want. This is what I'm going to pay. That's that.
Yeah.
It's over.
And here the Blue Jays are, as most teams are, looking and weighing the market and trying to determine when to take that plunge or if to take that plunge. The Orioles are doing the same thing. The Red Sox, meanwhile, are playing some good baseball again.
I just love that negotiating tactic of just being like, look, here's who I want. Here's what I'll pay. I'm not messing around. Like, no BS. Like, I'm not, you know, there's not going to be any real in-depth negotiation here. Like, I'll hear a counter, fine. But, like, this is the price. This is the guy. And that's it. And I think that's why you saw a move off of Rich Hill very quickly onto Drew Pomeranz.
Yeah, the Rich Hill stuff is super interesting, too. And seeing him leave the game against the Blue Jays after five pitches, it's crazy because, much like Pomeranz, he was acquired for basically nothing. So you have the two top trade chips. Last offseason, Hill signed for $6 million. Pomeranz was acquired for Yonder Alonso in a trade that I don't think anyone paid any attention to. So both of these guys, Hill and Pomeranz, are now the guys that everyone's talking about as these elite kind of midsummer trade targets.
I know it's tempting to look at players in the scope of what you acquired them for, right? So what you got this guy for and were able to turn him into. Sometimes I wonder if that's like a dangerous way to look at it, because then maybe you settle for a lesser return on moving that piece out. You know what I mean? Just in the scope of what you brought him in for. But yeah, absolutely. Those are two guys that, you know, and then you look at like what happened with Shelby Miller, right? Like it's kind of wild what's going on.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously that's a trade that the Diamondbacks would love to have back, I would think. I honestly think. Yeah, and I think the Hill's going to be traded for a ton. Like, I think that we might be surprised at how much he goes for.
Is Rich Hill going to be, from this point forward, the best starting pitcher to be moved between now and the deadline?
I would think so. Yeah. I mean, you know, you could make the case that Sonny Gray, well, I wonder about Julio Teheran, because right. Julio Teheran's a pretty good pitcher, and I think the Braves probably should trade him.
It just seems like last year the starting pitching market was pretty lousy with pitchers. Like there was a bunch of guys out there.
Lousy in a good way.
Lousy in a good way. But I mean, I'm trying to work that into my, it's lousy with something, right? Like, you know, like this room is like lousy with poor lighting. But like, and this year it seems like there is just not, you know, it's just not that same bounty.
Yeah, exactly. Price, Hamels. Am I missing someone from last
Leak.
Year? Yeah. You had some really good arms.
Fires.
There. Yeah.
Like. Yeah. You had some pretty good arms out there. And this year, like, you know, and maybe, like, I do wonder if the quietness around the trade market, which I love because I hate all the friggin' speculation and all the crap, but, like, it's been so quiet. I wonder if that is indicative of it's going to be a quiet trade deadline or if that's, like, a calm before the storm.
The other thing is, if you're a team and you sense that there's not a lot out there in starting pitching, and if you have a good young starting pitcher, maybe you put them out there. Maybe you see you know, if you're a non-contender, let's say you're the Angels and you have Matt Shoemaker pitching great, do you listen to offers on him just to see what you could potentially get?
Let me float this theory to you, which I am beginning to subscribe to pretty heavily, is that if starting pitching is going to be so scarce on the market, if it's going to be such a seller's market that you're going to have to give up like a ton of prospect capital to get a Rich Hill or a what have you, or, you know, whoever else, Tehran, whoever, and you don't really want to go that route, why not just like double down on offense even further and say like, look, we weren't able to, you know, acquire the pitching help that we needed, but we're just going to go and score 10 runs a game, try to keep up with us. Why not go get like Carlos Beltran? You know, like why not go get a Jay Bruce? Why not go get like a big bat to make this lineup even more deeper and just say like, look, like this kind of makes more sense to us right now to, you know, we're not going to have to give up as much and we're still going to get a bit better.
I think that that would make the Blue Jays a really good team in a different way. It would be a good team in a different shape, essentially. Right. But I guess my question would be, do you think you're going to get a Jay Bruce without giving up the kinds of top prospects that are in those same pitching discussions?
Right. Yeah. I mean, just the way the market's shaping up right now, and like, I don't know anything, but like, just it seems like there are a lot more position players available this year than pitchers. So maybe if you are working in that position player market, maybe, you know, it might not be the biggest bargain in the world, but you might be able to get away with giving up a bit less than you have had to for Rich Hill.
Yeah. Maybe it's not quite as crazy. Yeah, I guess at that point, then your new acquisition, what, slots in at DH? Because if you have Batista in right field, then you put Encarnacion at first and Smokes on the bench.
Basically, that's what you're doing. Yeah, like that's kind of what if you're getting the outfielder, then yeah. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe you can, you know, nobody thought Troy Tulowitzki was going to be traded last year, right? So maybe there's a middle infielder somewhere that you could, you know, bring in to play second base. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just spitballing.
Oh, yeah. No, a couple of guys I've wondered about in a speculative way would be Steve Pearce with the Rays.
Yeah.
Just right-handed bat, versatile. Not to say that he's necessarily going to be a huge upgrade at any one position, but if you think about him on your bench as opposed to, you know, whether it's Andy Burns or Ryan Goins, he gives you more than those guys. Same with Brandon Guyer. I mean, Guyer is a guy who mashes lefties. He's a great bench player, a great part-time player. Someone who could slot onto a contending team very nicely. And I don't think the acquisition price for those guys would be very high.
Eduardo Nunez, Minnesota Twins. How about, you know what I mean? You know, an infielder can play a lot of positions. He's an all-star this year. You know, like, why not just don't, you know, like what I really want the Blue Jays to do is get Carlos Beltran. Because I'm a huge Carlos Beltran fan. I think he's a Hall of Famer. I don't think the Blue Jays and Yankees are ever going to get together on a trade, really. But like, if you added him to this lineup right now and you slid him in at DH and had Edwin Encarnacion playing first base every day, he's not going to be back next year anyway. What do you care? He's going to, you know, like that would be amazing.
It would be fun to watch for sure. He's had some big homers against the Blue Jays. He seems to enjoy hitting in Rogers Center.
Oh yeah.
As most hitters do. Yeah. It'd be interesting. I mean, I can't see the Yankees and Jays making that trade though, as you said.
Me neither. I can't, but that would be great.
It would be fun.
That's the guy I want.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And the Yankees should be sellers. I mean, Chapman should be gone. And you would think Beltran should be gone. Maybe Miller. Maybe they listen on other guys. But the way the Yankees are playing, they probably should be sellers.
I feel like they keep Miller and Betances.
Yeah. Oh, Betances is a non-starter.
Of course.
Yeah. Miller, I wonder. You know, you wonder. Certainly, those guys aren't coming to Toronto.
No, those guys are not. And what the Blue Jays really need, I mean, really, is relief help. Because right now, it's like the bullpen depth chart goes Roberto Osuna, Jason Grilley, and then like a prayer, basically. Like maybe Brett Cecil's in the conversation, but he hasn't looked quite as sharp since he's been back as you'd like him to. And Jason Grilley is being used like a lot. Like his workload is up there. And like credit to him, he's pitching phenomenally. He's striking out like almost half the batters that he faces. He's also a 39-year-old man who's coming off of some serious Achilles surgery like a year ago. I think you can have some pretty legitimate concerns about how many bullets there are left with him. We saw what happened with Mark Lowe last year when, you know, Blue Jays got Mark Lowe. He'd been used a ton that year, veteran guy, and he really ran out of steam in the postseason and down the stretch of September. So I would have the same concerns about Jason Grilley despite how well he has pitched.
Yeah, that's probably entirely fair. And he's been actually very surprising how good he's been. Yeah, he has been essentially an elite pitcher. It's been 15 and two-thirds innings, 25 strikeouts. Like, that's a ton of strikeouts that he's getting. And the walks are down. His ERA is 2.3. I mean, he's been, I think, way better than anyone could have expected.
25 strikeouts of 62 batters faced.
Yeah.
It's almost half your batters you faced, you're striking out.
Yeah.
But I think the Blue Jays need more help in that back end of the bullpen. I think that has to be, just looking at the way the market's shaping up and like despite like Carlos Beltran pipe dreams, like I think that relief pitching, that has to be the primary target for the Toronto Blue Jays heading into the deadline.
And I think it will be. And I think that it's not only because of this year, but if you look at next year, then you have Brett Cecil hitting free agency. And so you don't have a shutdown lefty for your 2017 bullpen. Not that this is about 2017, but if you have a lot of trade talks going on, right, you might as well see what you can do about next year's team as well. And so if you're able to take a guy who's a left-hander and target him in trade talks, let's say it's a Ryan Buchter, let's say it's a Will Smith, someone with control, Fernando Abad, these guys are out there. And if the Blue Jays acquired someone like that, then he would help in the short term and in the long term.
Those are guys that, yeah, that come to mind totally. Will Smith of the Brewers for sure. Jeremy Jeffress of the Brewers as well. Like, I don't, he might even be one of the better relievers available this trade deadline. So yeah, I don't know if you're gonna be playing in that market, but look at the, you know, playing the Diamondbacks right now, Tyler Clippard, Daniel Hudson. Yeah, I've mentioned Brandon Kinsler a few times with the Twins. Like, he's a guy that you can control past this year and that I think might be a little bit undervalued just because of his age. You know, there's definitely options out there. And, you know, there's always going to be relievers available at the trade deadline. So many relievers are on short deals. Like, it's a pretty easy commodity to move around. You're not working with a ton of money. You're generally not working with a ton of terms. So, you know, it's almost like throwing a dart at a board with trying to, you know, pick what relievers might be available. But I think the Blue Jays absolutely have to come our way from August 1st with at least one reliable, trustworthy reliever.
Yeah, and I think that there are a lot of guys out there, you know, when it comes to determining who's available, I think the answer basically should be all of them. If they're on a non-contending team, what are you doing holding on to good relievers? I mean, you should trade those guys and try to convert them into something. It's different than, you know, for a team like the Twins. Yeah, if you have Eduardo Nunez and he's your all-star, maybe you hold on to him. He could probably be a pretty good player for the next few years. But, you know, you mentioned Mark Lowe before. Relievers come and go so quickly. So if you have one who's performing well, get something for him. Jeremy Jeffress was out of options a few years ago. Yeah. Same with Jeanmar Gomez on the Phillies. I mean, these guys right now have pretty good value. But if you're a non-contending team, you don't want to bank on that value. So you want to convert them into something pretty good.
Herodes Fiscaino, another name that comes to mind, the Atlanta Braves.
For sure. Hurt now, but I mean, if he comes back and he shows that he's healthy, then absolutely.
Absolutely. So we'll see. We'll see what's gonna happen at the trade deadline. It's been an interesting one. It's been quiet. I think we're going to learn some things about the Blue Jays management group, but I think that there is a sense, as you know, the Blue Jays are firmly in this race atop the AL East. You know, it's really tightening up right now with Boston and with Baltimore. But those teams have some pretty clear weaknesses. And I think if the Blue Jays can strengthen themselves, they can really emerge as kind of the team that is in the best shape going into these final 2 months.
For sure. They definitely can. And it's knotted up right there right now. They're pretty close. But I think that with, like you said, if they add a reliever or two, then that can go a really long way. And maybe some of it comes down to what kind of prospects they're willing to part with. I mean, there's kind of this group of guys that maybe a lot of fans are familiar with, where you have the Anthony Alfords and you have the Connor Green, Sean Reed Foley, Vladdy Jr. If the Blue Jays, I mean, I don't see the Blue Jays trading from that group, but it makes you wonder, I mean, how deep do they go into their prospect stores where they can actually get something useful in return, but they're not trading away these big pieces from their future?
Name one prospect who was traded for Mark Lowe.
Well, he's not a prospect, but Rob Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, yeah, he's not a prospect. Yeah. All right, name one of the other two guys. Can you?
Oh, man.
No, I can't without looking it up.
Yeah,
I can't without looking it up. And that's the thing, right? Like, maybe there is a Mark Lowe deal out there where you just say, hey, here's these three fringe guys. Rob Rasmussen, like, retired, like, after the season, right? So he's gone. And then the other two prospects were Nick Wells and Jake Brents.
Wow.
And I mean, if, you know, if the Mariners turn these guys into everyday major leaguers, they hit the lottery. So, you know, maybe there is a deal like that out there for, like, here's three fringe guys, three rolls of the dice. You can have them. We've developed them. Here's their medicals. They've got good arms. Like, they're not falling apart. They're fine. Here you go. Take them. Give us, you know, Vizcaino or whoever.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that would get you Vizcaino, though.
True.
Yeah.
That was a bad example.
But yeah, you could probably get.
Sometimes we make bad examples.
But it could be someone on the brink of free agency. Like, someone who's like an older guy, I think, would probably cost a bit less. And maybe you get something done.
Give me Houston Street for these guys.
Yeah. Maybe that gets it done.
Right. The Blue Jays are going to be adding from within. We know that. Jose Bautista is on the comeback trail. I believe he's playing with Dunedin right now. And then he's going to play this weekend in Buffalo. If you want to go down and watch the Bisons at Coca-Cola Field, you can go watch Jose Bautista.
You're going to be there?
Triple-A ball. I absolutely will not be there. and Ryan Goins also on the way back. He might be back as soon as Friday. So, you know, the obvious kind of machinations here that, you know, Andy Burns will be off the roster. Junior Lake will likely be off the roster. And then you've also got to get Marco Estrada off the DL, which probably means either Aaron Loop or Bo Schultz goes down. I would think probably Loop of those two, but it's, you know, who's to say? Who knows who's going to get hurt between now and then? But then essentially, when you have Estrada, Goins, Bautista back, you have your 2016 Toronto Blue Jays.
Yep.
Like unless I'm missing somebody, they're not missing anyone else.
Yeah. No, that's essentially it. That's the group.
Gavin Floyd. That's the one guy that, yeah.
Right.
They're missing.
Yeah. This is the group that they're going to try to win with, essentially. Plus or minus a little pitching. Plus or minus a Carlos Beltran, like we were talking about before. But I mean, this is the core of what we're going to be watching. And it seems like now they're getting to the point where they're probably as healthy as they've been all year.
This might be an interesting time to try to make some hay. Because how often, you look at how really the Blue Jays have been remarkably healthy. The Bautista injury was, that he's going to have missed about, a bit more than a month. Gavin Floyd gone for the second half of the year. But what you got in the first half from Gavin Floyd was like well more than what you should have expected to get. Estrada's back has hurt him at times, but really he missed a bit of time. He missed one start at the beginning of the season. And then I don't even know, I guess you could say he missed one start going into the All-Star break because Hutch made that start. Other than that, nobody's missed time.
It's crazy.
Tulo, I guess, missed a few weeks. He had that quad thing.
Travis early on.
Travis, yeah. But otherwise, I mean, the Blue Jays have been remarkably, remarkably healthy.
Yeah, especially with a lot of their key guys, the Donaldsons, the Encarnaciones on the pitching side, Sanchez, obviously Happ, Estrada. Their best pitchers, their best hitters have generally stayed healthy with the exception of Bautista.
I guess you could also throw Chris Colabello kind of into that. Like, it's not an injury, but he was, meant to be a part of this team coming out of spring training. I mean, I think, even you think back to last year in the playoffs, he won that first base job. He started, every game of the postseason over Justin Smoke. And, and Chris Colabello, last year was a really, really major contributor to the Blue Jays. We look at an 886 OPS over 360 plate appearances. So that also is kind of part of it.
For sure. And I wonder, to me, it seems likely they'll probably option him, even though he could come back. It just seems like with the roster taking shape the way it is, it's almost like for Colabello, he would have had a better chance of cracking this roster at times when guys were hurt.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There isn't room for him on this roster right now. Whereas, like, kind of, you look at last year, like, the redundancy on the Jays roster was Chris Colabello and Justin Smoke. We're like, power hitting, kind of first base DH types. Now the redundancy is Ryan Goins and Darwin Barney, who both kind of do the same things. So that's kind of where the Blue Jays have, used that roster spot this year, is to have that extra middle infielder. It gives you a bit more defense. Like, and it's fine because Blue Jays are scoring plenty of runs. And I think Chris Colabello will be optioned, and I think he will play Buffalo. I think he would probably have to be, if there was an injury to Edwin Encarnacion or Justin Smoke, I think Chris Colabello is probably the first guy in line.
Yeah, I would think so.
Him or like what, Jesus Montero?
Yeah, but they've had their chances to call up Montero,
yeah,
and they haven't done it. I mean, Matt Dominguez too, but I don't think that those guys are particularly high on the depth chart. So I think that Colabello would have a good chance. And if there's not an injury, I would think September, we probably see him.
I think definitely you see him in September.
Yeah.
I think these guys in that room who still have a lot of, solidarity with him and still like him quite a bit and want to see him back in the majors. I think they understand the, the situation that he's in right now. But I think, I think definitely September before, if there isn't an injury, is there any way can he hit well enough to hit his way back onto this roster before September? I wonder.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, in place of who, though?
That's the thing.
Yeah. I don't think they would go to a short bullpen.
It would be because we've seen Ryan Goins be like really poor offensively this year, and the Blue Jays haven't optioned him. But like that would be the guy who it's like, if Ryan Goins is just cannot hit at all and can't get into the lineup because Darwin Barney's still hitting, Devin Travis looks fine, and Troy Tulowitzki is Troy Tulowitzki.
Yeah.
Maybe you swap them out just to get a better bat off the bench.
The other thing is, I mean, if the Blue Jays add a position player at the deadline, then Goins would probably be the guy that
is the thing too,
who loses his spot at that point.
Yeah.
So then it would become even harder to fit Colabello in. I mean, the way Barney and Travis have played, I don't really see Goins starting at all for this team.
No.
Yeah. So, really? I mean, you certainly could part with him. But
and it's nice to have the defensive versatility, like, late in games with him, right, I think. But it's kind of, do you want that or do you want, like, a Chris Colabello bat who can come up and hit the ball over the fence, you know, in a pinch hit appearance in the eighth inning?
Yeah. Goins hitting 176 this year. So yeah. you haven't gotten a ton of offense from him.
No. And but the Blue Jays have kept him on the roster because yeah. they, you know, they like what he provides in other areas of the game.
Yeah, and I think that for a guy who's been there all year, it would, you know, I don't see them optioning Goins for Colabello at this point. I see Goins staying up and Colabello staying down.
I feel like I would, because yeah. I would rather have the bat, I think.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather have that. Because the rest of your defenders are good. There's no one you really, like Michael Saunders is the one guy you think about making a defensive replacement for. Maybe they have to start thinking about it with Jose Bautista. I don't know. That's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah.
But like they're in the infield. There's nobody that you're really looking to make a defensive replacement for. So what, you know, why do you have Ryan Goins?
If the question is 2015 Colabello versus present day Goins,
yeah.
Completely agree. My one reservation with that at this moment would be that Colabello, after having played what, 7, 8 triple A games, by the time it'll be 10 by the time he's eligible to come back.
Right.
That's really not very much.
No.
Are you confident that his timing is back to the point where he can be an impact bat?
I mean, he's been playing in extended games for a while now.
Yeah.
In the heart of his, you know, of his suspension, he was like hitting bombs off of like 2016 draft picks, right? So I don't know. Like, yeah, you'd have to see if he's, the thing is like, this is Chris Colabello last year at AAA Buffalo, like hit so well, the Blue Jays had to call him up.
Yeah.
So if he does that again,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I think he has to prove it to you, certainly. There's also the wrinkle of, like, he can't be on your playoff roster. To me, like, I don't put as much stock into that because, like, get to the playoffs.
Yeah,
like, why are you worrying about your playoff roster in July?
Yeah.
Like, get to the playoffs. So this guy's going to help you get there. You're an idiot if you don't use him.
Yeah.
Just because, oh, well, but we can't carry him into October. What about the team chemistry? Like, go, like, shove it. Like, this guy's going to help you get there.
Yeah, you know, the more we talk about it, the more I think that there's a strong case to be made for having Colabello on the roster as opposed to a Goins.
Ooh, I've turned him.
Yeah, well,
I turned him.
I do think it makes some sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. And I think that just you got to put aside the suspension, put aside the playoff roster thing and say, look, we're trying to win ball games.
Yeah.
And this guy's going to help us win ball games more so than what Ryan Goins is bringing right now.
And Goins has options, so you don't worry about losing him.
No. Yeah. No, not at all. The other guy is Franklin Morales. So it's Friday is his last day of his rehab, I believe, right? Like of his 30 days?
He's done. 30 as of Wednesday.
As of Wednesday,
yep,
it's over.
He's done.
And they have to make a decision by Friday?
Well, that's because their next game is Friday. If they played Thursday, they would have to make a decision Thursday.
Right.
Yep.
Understood. What the hell is going to happen here? Like, what a strange situation.
I don't see them adding him to the roster.
Yeah. So then you just outright release.
I mean, you could. Here's the one thing you could do. You could put him on the roster as a way of preserving depth. You option Loop, which they've done obviously before, and then there's your lefty for lefty move. And then when you have Estrada come back,
Schultz.
There goes Schultz.
Yeah.
So you could do that, and that's the way you would preserve depth.
Right.
Now, where do they make this decision? And just to go back to the Goins thing quickly, one factor in this is that he got hurt and he lost his roster spot pitching for this team.
Yes.
So that's where it's like, It's not just the roster value versus roster value. Like there's something there where Goins got hurt pitching, and I think that is probably earned him a few more days on the 25 man. And I wonder if the same thing goes for Loop, someone who's been with this team for a long time, as opposed to Morales, where the loyalty might swing more toward Loop.
Right. You do. Yeah. Ryan Goins has been a bit hard done by. But he also, and this also is to his credit as well, he kind of took one for the team by going on the DL at all. Because, I mean, he was, you know, we saw him like a few days after he went on the DL, like throwing and stuff. You know what I mean? Like working in a...
It took him a while to fully throw.
Right.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, I don't think it would have been a DL stint if not for the Blue Jays needing the roster spot at that time.
Right.
Really, after an 18-inning game. Regardless, this stuff is ancient history, but still, like... With, you know, with Franklin Morales, I mean, it's such an interesting situation with non-guaranteed deal, which is now guaranteed. It's $2 million. Blue Jays have left him to the very last moment on his rehab assignment. He's pitched like 9 times for Buffalo.
And I think it's safe to say that there are probably pockets of the Blue Jays organization that look at this guy as earning $2 million and he really hasn't pitched a lot for them. He wasn't available early on when they really could have used the bullpen help. I'm not sure if he's earned himself a lot of trust in this organization yet.
No, yeah, I don't. If anything, he's done the opposite.
That's kind of what I'm suggesting here. Yeah.
We'll see what happens with that. Who knows? Some roster machinations are on their way for the Toronto Blue Jays. A break is on its way for At the Letters, but when we come back, we're going to talk about what everybody is talking about ad nauseum. That is the case of young Aaron Sanchez. More after this on At the Letters.
This has a nice ring to it. All-star Aaron Sanchez makes his 19th start of the season. Aaron pitched the fourth inning at the All-Star game last Tuesday.
Full count offering. Strike three. Got him on the outside corner. Castillo goes down. Drury. And he just pours in that fastball. And that is two strikeouts, both looking. The 24-year-old to the plate, swing and a miss. Sanchez got him, strikes out the side.
It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson-Smith. We're on sportsnet.ca. We're on iTunes. Please like, share, favorite, and subscribe. We're going to talk about Aaron Sanchez, I promise. We're going to talk about Aaron Sanchez. But first, let's talk about Justin Smoke. Justin Smoke went and got himself paid over the All-Star break. Not even in the baseball sense, he didn't really get himself like paid, but he got himself market valued. Over the All-Star break, he signed a 2-year deal worth $8.25 million. So next season, Justin Smoke will make $4.125 million, and the season after that, he will make the same amount of money. And that's how money works. And then there's an option after that. It's like an escalating option. So like it's right now $6 million, based on like plate appearances or something. It can go up to as much as $8 million. I mean, it's such a meh thing, but Blue Jays fans, none too pleased.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised by that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a player who's been a part-time player, and you would think will continue to be something close to a regular/part-time player, and he's earning the money that those types of players make.
Let me put it to Blue Jays fans this way. Adam Lind, while not a switch hitter, is somewhat of a comparable to Justin Smoke in a way. They put, you know, first base DH guys that you don't want to play against lefties, really, right? Kind of platoon, bench back type of guys, have some power, you know, not the greatest defense at first base, but like passable, capable.
Smoke's better than
Lind, but still, like, they're kind of in the, if anything, you probably would rather have Justin Smoke than Adam Lind, I would say.
They're comparable.
Probably. They're comparable, but I think most people would rather have Justin Smoke. Hits from both sides of the plate, better defense, you know, similar power, whatever. What I'm trying to say here is Adam Lind's making $8 million this year.
Yeah.
Justin Smoke's going to make half that. So, you know, it's not as an insane amount of money as I think a lot of people think got sticker shock over this thing, when it's really not a lot of money. It's John Jaso money.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Like, and the Jaso deal, perfectly reasonable, by the way. $8 million over two, and that's what you pay for a first. $8 million doesn't get you an elite first baseman. It gets you maybe a year of Mike Napoli. You know, when Adam LaRoche was playing, it got you, you know, most of a year of Adam LaRoche. Like, this is the tier of first baseman we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And these guys who are, you know, just if you can hit 20 bombs in the big leagues, you can make $4 to $6 million a year.
Yeah,
basically.
Even if Smoke doesn't do that, I mean, even if he just posts a 750 OPS and hits 10 to 15 and plays good defense, then that's, you know, you're getting enough value to make this contract worthwhile.
There's two other things I want to mention about this. One, it's not like this contract is unmovable. If anything, this is actually an attractive contract for another team. Like, if you had to free up those $4 million a year for whatever reason, you could move Justin Smoke. It's not like other teams would be scared off by this deal. I don't know if you'd get great return on it, but I think that there are other teams that would be interested in Justin Smoke on this contract. So it's not like you're absolutely, like, you know, tied to the bottom of the sea with him. The other thing, Justin Smoke's like,
he's not playing to his career norms this year. I think he's better than he's played this year. Ross Atkins, you know, mentioned that a lot, in talking about this deal, and that we think there's a lot more here than what he's shown this year. When you look at Justin Smoke's season, it's kind of weird. He's striking out a lot more than he has in the past. You know, he's not making contact like he has in the past. And this is after that run of like the first 3 weeks or whatever, where it was like, you know, either he walked or hit a home run. Like, you know, like he was really, really good at the beginning there. And since then, you know, I think he's going through some struggles with his swing right now, where the strikeout numbers are up and just whiffing a lot. I think there's a better hitter in here than you're seeing right now.
Yeah, I think you can make that case for sure. And he definitely has the power. He's a switch hitter, which is nice as a piece on the roster. I think one of the things that gets lost in this too is that teams are forever trying to make that roster fit together. And if you have a switch hitter, if you have good defenders around, this is why guys like Darwin Barney and Justin Smoke are appealing to teams. It's not because they're going to be middle of the order threats, but they help make the other pieces of the roster fit together. And, you know, as long as you're talking about potential extensions, Barney might be a guy that you look at too, the way he's playing this year. Cause it can just be, you know, you just round things out when you have reliable big league pieces like that.
It's kind of working backwards, where like normally, like in the off season, you would go get Justin Smoke to round out your roster. Whereas now you're working on the fringes now before taking on bigger pieces later.
Yeah. If you want to view it through the lens of wins above replacement, which kind of misses on Smoke, I think, but
it does a lot on Smoke, I think.
Yeah, and I think bench players in general, it's kind of tricky, but if you go in the Baseball Reference version, he's been worth 1.5 wins above replacement. So if you think, all right, he's going to be, if he's even worth one win above replacement in the course of these next 2 years, the contract's worth it. I mean, it's not as though you have to get a huge amount of production for this deal to be worth it from the team's standpoint.
Yep, and I would point to a guy who has a 76.3% career contact rate, but this year is making contact at 71.3, as that he can be better than this. And a guy who's just, for whatever reason, going through something with his swing, think he'll be better. All right, it's time. It's time to talk about Aaron Sanchez. I have nothing new to say about Aaron Sanchez. That's why we're leaving it to the end. Because what more do you want me to say? He's phenomenal. He's like pitching his way into a Cy Young race right now. He's the John Gibbons every day gets asked, when are you taking Aaron Sanchez out? Are you still taking Aaron Sanchez out? And every day he says, yeah, we're going to have to do it. It's going to be unpopular. Like he says a version of the same thing every freaking day. But we're reaching like that breaking point. With 8 more innings, Aaron Sanchez ties his career high in innings at 133.1. So if he goes 8 his next time out, you've tied that career high. And then after that, you have entered into the unknown of how far you want to push him in terms of innings. And you know and as much as I don't like to use innings as the measuring stick, and I think the Blue Jays have a wealth of better ways of doing it and of sports science, gadgets and tools and resources and things they can use to measure work rate and stress and essential nervous system and all these things. It's if you're, you know, they keep citing innings and it seems like the caution here is with the innings. And so we're reaching that watershed moment. We're reaching that time.
Yeah, we really are. And I think that in the next few weeks, we'll probably have more clarity, you would think, but it's been so murky all year long. Yeah. And one interesting wrinkle in this now is just the idea that the players themselves would probably be disappointed.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe even more than that.
Not probably.
To absolutely see Sanchez lead the rotation. And understandably so. They want to win and he's helping them win. So it's going to be tough to sell that to the players, to the fans, to Sanchez himself. And, you know, John Gibbons was saying to reporters the other day, he might have to be the fall guy for that. He's expecting to be the fall guy for that. But he also acknowledged that there have been discussions about, hey, is there a way to keep him in the rotation all season long? As we've talked about many times on At The Letters, saying, all right, maybe there is a way to do this where you balance short and long term.
I mean, I just think that he's pitching too deep into games every time it goes out, right? Because if his next time out he goes 6 or 7, he's now an inning or two off that max. And if you've decided as an organization you only want to go 30 innings over that max or something like that, after at that point you might only be working with 5 more starts.
Yeah,
before the postseason,
right? At which point, the other thing is, you probably get asked about this on the radio all the time too.
No,
but the stacking up the Blue Jays playoff rotation, we're not doing that. We're not doing that until there's a playoff rotation to discuss. I think it's safe to say. But I don't think it's getting ahead of ourselves to make the point that Sanchez would be useful in a playoff rotation.
Do you think
if
that,
you get there?
Do you think he'd be useful? Do you think the best friggin' pitcher on the team would be useful in a playoff rotation? Like, I don't even know what to say about it anymore. You make the point, like, to the players in the clubhouse, and Aaron Sanchez is saying, I feel fine. I feel great. I feel so strong. Like, I feel amazing. I go out there and I just run over Arizona Diamondbacks like they're nothing. And I feel great. And they're going to take me out of the rotation. You have to go into that clubhouse and tell those players, we're going to take away your best pitcher out of this rotation when he's saying he feels great and he wants to keep pitching.
To stark contrast to last year when they added an ace at the deadline, this year, oh, right? We're taking one out.
Right? Like, in terms of ERA, like, Aaron Sanchez has been like 2 runs better than David Price this year.
This year.
So, like, what? I just, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, as tough as it is, as much as, like, fans are, like, hating this, and as much as, like, I think, I can speak for myself, like, I am hating having to talk about this every freaking day.
I actually find the discussion pretty interesting still. I don't find
it. We don't have answers, though.
We don't have answers.
I want to know things. I'm a black and white guy, man. Like, I want to know things.
You are literally wearing a black and white t-shirt right now.
Literally.
Yeah.
Shorts are gray, though.
Shorts are gray.
But, like, you know, I want answers. And it's as hard as it is, I think, for fans, for us, for everyone, it's got to be so much harder for that team. Like, this season could hinge on this decision, really.
I wonder, I mean, if they add a useful starter at the deadline, it makes the decision that much easier.
Yes.
But like we were saying before, that is going to be really tough.
Yeah.
That's going to be really tough to do unless you're giving up a lot of long-term pieces.
And can you add a starter who's, you know, going to give you a production that's relatively the same as Aaron Sanchez?
There are probably 2 or 3 guys that can do that.
Yeah.
Hill, Gray, Julio Teheran. Maybe you find someone under the radar. I mean, they did it with Grilly. It, you know, you can dream and think that there's someone out there who's underappreciated and somehow you're gonna trade for, you know, whoever it is. Irvin Santana is going to have a career renaissance once he arrives at Rogers Center and you find him and he goes off. But that's a really tough thing to do.
And the biggest, like, shame in all of this is that nobody knows. Like, you could shut Aaron Sanchez down for the season today and not have him pitch another game, and he's still in his second start of 2017, his shoulder might go, right? You could leave him in the rotation through to the end of the season and the same thing might happen. Or you leave him in the rotation till the end of the season and he's fine in his, like, in his second start. You know, you just don't know.
Yeah.
You just don't.
And the other thing is,
like,
if,
with Matt Harvey, they don't know.
Well, and you see the second year effect coming with these guys. You know, Syndergaard, Matt Harvey, they've all had health issues this year. They were all pushed hard last year. I think that anyone who follows the Mets, cares about the Mets, would say it was worth it. They won the NL pennant. They had a chance to win the World Series. So those are the trade-offs that you make. But the other thing is, you kind of lose, I don't want to say you lose control of it, because if you're a team, you always have control of these decisions. But if you get to the middle of September and Sanchez is still there and he's pitching well, at that point, the gloves are off. I mean, he's going, and he's going as deep as you are. So you're not going to, you know, there's a point of no return with this stuff.
If you're going to get wet, go swimming, basically, right?
Like, and we're almost getting to the point where the point of no return is now.
I think so.
It's in the next few weeks at some point.
That's kind of the point. I mean, the next start could be, you know what I mean? Like, if you move, you give him one more start, but are you going to give him one more start? He's not even going to pitch into August? Like, what are you, nuts? You got two more months left, right? I think you need Aaron Sanchez to be in the rotation at the beginning of August.
Yeah, he will be.
So that's at least 2 more starts.
Yeah, I think that much.
At least 2 more starts. So say he goes 6 in each of those. So that's 12 more innings. That puts him over, like, you know what I mean? Like, that that puts him up to 137.
But he was always going to surpass his career high.
Yeah, but that puts him up to 137. Then how much further do you want to push him? You want to push him 30 innings over his last career high? So then that leaves you with, like, 20 before, you know what I mean? Like,
it's interesting how age plays into it too, because Pomeranz has never pitched a lot of innings either. And for him, he's just going. I mean, there's not that innings question looming, because I believe Pomeranz is 27, 28 in that range. So he's got a few years on Sanchez, even though he doesn't have that bulk of innings. The Padres and Red Sox have been more comfortable saying, all right, go for it.
If you take him out of this rotation and you hit a skid in late August and September, fall out of a playoff spot, and then you bring him back next year and his elbow still goes, you know, like, you have to, like, this decision is, like, there's some gravity to it.
There is. There definitely is. Because you look at guys like Matt Harvey and how the narrative around them for a really long time is about the innings limit. And the same was true of Steven Strasburg for a really long time in Washington. And it's only now that, you know, he's signed this new contract. The free agency stuff isn't looming. He's having a fantastic, I mean, of all the players in Washington, he might actually be their best this year.
Yeah.
Scherzer and Harper aside, like, Strasburg has been insanely good. But it took him, I mean, he was drafted, I think, in 2010, right? 2009
yeah.
with Strasburg. So it took him almost, it took him 7 years, essentially, to get to the point where the discussion no longer surrounded his innings and his arm and the health that he was going to have going forward.
Well, yeah, I think Jeff Passan is making the point on this very podcast that, you know, once you get past a certain age with these guys, you just have to let them be pitchers. And then they just are pitchers.
And I don't think, I'm not saying that Sanchez is there now, but man, the way he's pitched, it would be insanely hard if you're in that clubhouse to look at him and say, there's any other course of action to take except keep putting him out there.
What sucks about it is that the Blue Jays have this like homegrown guy that they drafted out of high school. They developed, they turned him into this thing, and now he looks like an ace, and he looks amazing, and he's pitching so, so well. And I feel like fans can't quite really enjoy it because there is this looming thing hanging over. Like, this is a really good scenario, but there is this looming cloud hanging over it at all times.
He's the best starting pitcher they developed since, what, Romero?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I can't think of anyone since Ricky.
I mean, Stroman, his struggles.
Right.
But Sanchez is having a season, a full season to this point, that Stroman hasn't done.
Since Ricky. People are going to say since Holiday, but Ricky had an amazing year.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, you got to give Romero credit.
Oh, yeah. He had that 1 year where he threw like 220 innings and like at a sub-3 ERA. Like, it was insane. So I don't know. I would say that if you're a fan, next time Aaron Sanchez starts, breathe it in. Enjoy it. Savor it. You never know when it might be the last one.
Wow. You think so? That's what John Gibbons tells his players?
Enjoy it, fellas.
Enjoy this, guys.
Enjoy it. All right, we're going to get out of here. Thanks for coming along with us. Our thanks to producer Sam McKee. Get him on Twitter, at Sam A. McKee. Get Ben on Twitter, at BNixonSmith. Get me on Twitter, at Arden Zwelling. We're on sportsnet.ca. We're on iTunes. If you're not subscribing already, I don't know what's wrong with you, but fix that about your life. Be better. For Ben, for Sam, my name's Arden Zwelling. Thank you very much. Talk to you next time on At The Letters.